Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, and this is the third Monday, so it must be match, no match. We are awaiting Cynthia Hyatt, who is the star. We got a great show for you today. In the meantime, our producer Tom and I will talk a little bit about many different things. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day, a little bit warm, but I think I'm ready to talk.
It is cooling down, isn't it?
It has been nice, especially at night.
Yeah, I noticed that the other night. It's like, it seemed like dramatic. It's like falling off a cliff. One day it's hot, one day it's getting cooler.
I hope it keeps up.
What do you think? You've been here in Phoenix a long time.
I have. In October, always, we get one last blast of that hot air.
So we may have a blast of the past.
At least during the day.
So that'll be good. So it is nice to get some cool weather. Now, let's see. You know, it was interesting that on Sunday, yesterday, the Arizona Republic, I was not sure why I pulled the section out, but the career builder or mm-hmm. the want ads. And I was shocked to see there was only two pages, roughly, 2 to 3 pages, really nothing in there.
Total of all the professions?
Yeah, unless I missed it, but it was astonishing. I remember the days when there would be like 10, 15, mm-hmm. 20, 30 pages of help wanted stuff or career stuff, and this was shocking. It was like, it was so thin, I couldn't even find it in the paper until I really looked very closely.
So 2 pages yesterday, you say?
Yeah, and I was shocked because that's got to be a sort of a reflection of what's going out
there.
And that's got to be discouraging for a lot of people.
Do you happen to remember the breakdown of the kinds of things that were open?
Well, what was interesting, usually one of the bigger things were like accounting, CPA mm-hmm. stuff. I didn't see any.
Well, I'll bet your eyes go right to that.
Yeah, I went right to that, although I work for myself. But I was shocked to see that. That there wasn't anything there. There was a lot of sales things, a lot of training. There was a big ad for car sales.
So commission stuff.
Yeah, a lot of commission stuff, which is, I guess, going to be challenging right now, especially if people aren't buying. If you don't buy, there's no commission.
Although, if you're good at it, I think you can always do something.
Oh, I agree. I think the best people will always do well despite the economy. But it's going to involve so many different things. Since this is the show today, of course, is psychology-based, of course, mindset has everything to do with anything.
So the mind, and I would say, the mind, that includes education, doesn't it? So
it would include your desire mm-hmm. to upgrade your skills. That's part of the mindset.
Your attitude.
Attitude. Yeah. And those who will not or do not, for whatever reason, upgrade their skills in today's economy, they're going to have a tough time. But those who decide, hey, I need to add certain skills, I need to create more sophistication, more knowledge, those type of things so I can get ahead of the game, they could do very well.
Oh, that's so true, if you don't keep up, you're going to get left in the dust.
There's no doubt, and there's a lot of dust out there these days, not just in Arizona, the dust storms, but it's really very important that people understand that. Now, a lot of people may get immobilized. There's two things that can happen. They can have a belief, and this is interesting, I think. I was looking at this in one of my NLP books, that's neuro-linguistic programming, mm-hmm. on the weekend, about beliefs and how beliefs are so significant and profound to people's behaviors and how they play out life. And there's a couple beliefs. One is, do you believe that it's possible for you? And if you don't believe something's possible for you, then you have no help. Now, what about this, Tom? What if you believe that it is possible for you, but you don't have the resources to accomplish it? So you might have faith, but that hopefulness may turn into helplessness.
I think part of that faith is that you're going to get there somehow, that it's going to be okay no matter what happens, that kind of thought. And I will say that I do know that there are tools out there. If you have the, you said desire and belief. You know, I was told just recently, if you believe you can do this, you can do it. You know,
well, that's the key. The thing is do people really believe it's possible for them, not possible for others? A lot of there's various types of beliefs. One is that, yeah, I believe it's possible, but not for me.
Well, I think it also is reflected in a person's action. You know, you were asking, I think, about can a person do this, tools out there, resources. Weren't you asking something about
that? Well, yeah, there's an aspect of belief is that you might believe it's possible, but if you don't believe you have the resources to pull it off, that could turn into helplessness.
Okay.
And that's really interesting. So you can believe something can be done, like I believe, or someone can believe they can add skills, but if they don't have the resources, let's say they don't think they have the money to go back to school, then that turns into a form of helplessness, which is apathy. So there's really two aspects to the belief, is can you do it, and, you know, do you believe it's possible for you, and do you have the resources? Can you get the resources to do it? So that's real important. So pretty interesting, Tom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, just when I was getting rolling on beliefs, we have Cynthia Hyatt rolling in from somewhere, from probably the freeways or something. Yeah, somewhere in Phoenix. So that's my short topic on beliefs, Tom.
Well, helplessness and resources and belief, and we're going to have to continue this sometime, Dave.
Well, I think it'd be important because I think Cynthia would agree, too, that beliefs are so powerful, whether you think you can or can't. That's how you're going to play your life out. And I think that could be a topic for a future show because people need to know how to identify limiting beliefs, change them to empowering beliefs so they can feel not only hopeful, but they get out of the helplessness stage so they can actually take action.
Yeah, get into action.
How does that sound, Cynthia?
Sounds very good.
Wow, see? Look, we got the master, the expert, saying that sounds good. That made my day, Mr. Tom.
Well, that's a lot of what this new thing we are going to talk about is.
Reality, right?
Yes.
Well, this is good because they say perception is reality.
Well, you know, this is what was so interesting.
And I like your hair, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Is it a new hairdo?
No, it's just straight.
It's straight,
yes.
But I like it.
Thank you.
Very nice.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So perception is reality. That's correct.
Well, and there's this new movie out. Have you heard about this?
Which one?
It's brand new. It's in Harkins. I just got an email from a very a colleague of mine that had seen it, and it's something about the case for
Benjamin
perception the illusion. It's the illusion of perception or something like this.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
And it's in Harkins, and it's an independent film, and I guess it's, like, amazing.
Really?
And so they were talking about, you know, how many divorces are occurring and that 1 in 15 children will experience incarceration at some point in their life. This is where the statistics are leading.
Really?
And so they were talking about the perception and how people perceive themselves. So I was really excited. I went, oh, my gosh, that's what I'm talking about today, and here it is. It's current. So I guess I'm there. I'm tracking.
You're in tune.
I think I am.
And, you know, perhaps we should do a movie review on that next time.
That would be something.
But yes. You don't know what the name is. Maybe Tom could, during the break or something, check that out, what the name. I haven't heard of it, and I'm usually a big movie goer.
Well, is this that free thing that they're showing for a limited time?
It's at Harkins, I know.
Right, in Scottsdale?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did hear
I'm
something about
sure.
that earlier today, and it was like two short words was
like
the title, something like that.
Or was that just your perception? It was only there for a couple hours.
Well,
no, I thought it was there one day.
We'll look it up on one of the breaks because
yeah,
I have
will.
It on my phone.
Oh, you do?
I have the,
where's
the
your phone?
Website. In my, here.
Oh, okay. Here we go. She's going to get her phone right in person. Okay, Tom, back to beliefs and resources.
Yes.
Oh, no. Something is back. Okay.
Because then we can look it up because it really is quite
profound.
Yes.
And significant.
Okay, so hopefully I can pull it quickly.
All right, so we'll talk about reality of who you are. That's a topic today. That's a good one. I think that is going to be a very good topic.
Yes, okay.
Oh, you got it.
It is.
7 Days in Utopia. That's Robert Duvall. I don't think that's the one, though.
Okay.
But it could be.
No, it's at Scottsdale Fashion Square, and it's an independent film. And it is The State of Illusion.
Oh.
Yes, that's the name of it, The State of Illusion.
And it's still there?
Mm-hmm. She says, I highly recommend it. Sometimes the writer and the producer show up for question and answer with the audience, which they did this last weekend, and it was phenomenal, I guess.
Oh, it's like one of those interactive shows, mm-hmm. like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yes, it's at the Harkins Camelview 5.
Oh, I've been there. They have some interesting independent films there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so the State of Illusion.
Right.
And that is somewhat your topic today.
It is,
today.
Which is really amazing.
Wow, how did you do that?
I don't know. I wrote this 5 years ago, and I had been thinking about it for the last, month or so, as we moved off of the whole gender issue, that I wanted to go over some of this. And so I pulled it up. I thought that we would do this today, and then I got this email this morning.
That is like...
I know. Isn't that amazing?
The universe, right?
I know.
Wow.
I think I must be tracking.
I think you are tracking.
Yes.
The law of attraction, right?
That's not the same word.
Oh, that is?
No.
The law of traction.
There you go.
Really?
No.
Oh, what is the difference, by the way? Now you got me curious.
The law of what?
You must be tracking versus the law of attraction.
Tracking means that I'm tuned into what's going on, maybe spiritually.
Oh.
So more prophetic type of things. And the law of attraction is I'm attracting to me more of what is like me.
Oh, you're probably doing both.
Right.
All right. So I was half right.
Yes.
All right. So the reality of who you are.
Right.
What
right.
is that? How do you want to start on this? This sounds fascinating. Because we did talk about perception as reality.
Yes. Yes. And this is a lot of what this is. The way that I perceive myself then ends up creating a reality for myself.
Wow, which could be limited, too.
Well, it's very limiting, and sometimes it's very, very dysfunctional and very, very destructive. And so one of the things that when I talk about this, the reason it's so important for relationship is if I don't know who I really am, okay, if my reality about myself, my perception about myself is inauthentic because I'm not in touch with myself, then that is where that law of attraction comes into play.
In a negative sense.
In a very negative sense.
So a lot of people, I bet a lot of people think, oh, law of attraction, it's only positive. Where's my stuff? And they blame the outside. But it could be if mm-hmm. if you're not having the life you want, then guess what? It's time to go inward to really find
That's
out
right.
why.
Well, and there's a famous proverb, and I think we talked about the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know?
I love that one.
Yes.
Did you like that
yes.
too?
Yes, oh, very much so. And I think this one is similar in thought.
Ah.
So, you know, the thing about that movie and this whole idea of reality and is that famous proverb, for as a man thinketh within, so he is.
Yeah.
So God knew that when he made us. He knew the power of our mind. And that the way that I think, if I think on something, because it talks about in Philippians as well, that we're to think on those things that are good, pure, righteous, holy, of good repute, because God knows the power of our thinking.
And it will draw us.
That's right. And so it creates realities. It creates, this is where we get that self-fulfilling prophecy type of phenomenon.
That's right. And so I like what you said. Think on the good things or things that you
right,
really desire.
That's Philippians 4:8.
Wow, 4:8. I'm mm-hmm. going to write this down. I love this stuff.
Now, I believe it's 4:8 or maybe 4:6. Someone maybe needs to correct me.
4:8, 4:6, 4:10 maybe. No, what do I know about that one?
I'm pretty sure it's 4:8 in Philippians.
So, you know, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but here's one of the questions either now or mm-hmm. down later in the show would be, is it just a matter of simply thinking on good things? Because so many people have internal conflicts. They may have a belief deep down that they mm-hmm. don't deserve it. And it might set up an internal conflict. They want to think on good things, but then unconsciously, at a minimum, they're probably thinking bad things.
Absolutely. Well, see, and this is where we get this whole idea. When we do any kind of cognitive restructuring therapeutically, you know, this is a lot of what cognitive behavioral therapy is I'm going to change the way that I think. Well, one of the things that we find is that we have underlying belief systems, and these are unconscious or subconscious.
Right.
And so they're usually generalities, like, I am what I am, I cannot change. I'm only as good as what I do. One of the other beliefs is, we were getting a note there about the movie. Yes, the people.
Oh,
the people versus the state of illusion. Awesome. Yes.
Oh, the people versus, I like people versus
yes.
Larry Flint or something.
Okay, so sorry we got off on a tangent there.
Yeah, Harkins, Camelview.
So thank you, Amber, for looking that up for us.
That was nice of her.
Mm-hmm.
That means
yes,
you're very popular, by the way. When you're here, everyone's listening. They're tuned in. It's like break time for them. they take a 2-hour break.
I love that. That's
awesome. That's true. Well, that was very nice of Amber, yes, too. Yes. The people versus...
The State of Illusion at Harkins Camel View.
Wow.
And it's not free.
No, but it's probably worth it, though.
Well, that's what my colleague said. She said the question and answer time was totally worth the price, as well as the movie itself.
We should get the writer on as a guest
there
next
you go.
Time.
That
wouldn't
would
that be
good.
Awesome?
That would be really awesome.
Should I look into that?
Absolutely.
Please. I'm going to look into
please
that.
Please do. Please do that.
I'm going to do it next time.
That's good.
Yeah, that would be great. So
yes. Okay, so here we're back.
Yeah.
Now we're back. So what we find is that there are unconscious or subconscious beliefs that drive the way we think. And so what we have is we have beliefs versus create thoughts. Thoughts create feelings. Feelings create actions.
Yeah.
So by the time somebody's in an action state, okay, I'm saying to them, well, of course you're having a difficult time. You're like white-knuckling your whole life, okay? What we want to do is we want to go back to the belief so that we change the belief. And so if one of the core beliefs that person has is I'm only good as what I do, or I'm only successful if people like me, or
no matter how much I work,
right,
I can't get ahead.
Right,
you
that's
hear,
a big one.
You hear that all the time, right?
Yes. And so usually these core beliefs are given to us in our family, generally, before the age of 7, usually. Seven to 12. You know, from 0 to 12, about. Because they're about the way that we're relating, and it's about also the unconscious beliefs that our parents have that we osmosisly pick up. So people like in my age group had parents that probably went through the Depression. And so that dictated a lot of how my parents feel about money. Well, I can pick up on some of that same belief if I'm not careful.
And it's very good to be conscious of the belief so you can at least get a chance to change it.
Right.
Because of course, you want to change it to be more effective much
absolutely.
In life.
Absolutely. Well, and as we talk about this particular thing, about the reality of who you are, I want my beliefs to match up with truly who I am. Who does God really say that I am? I want those beliefs to match what he says about me.
And so what you're really saying, it sounds like, is that also people maybe with a low sense of self-esteem or a very low purpose or identity in life, they should really understand what their intention is so they can start upgrading their beliefs or matching their beliefs,
right,
as you say. Because if you have low self-esteem, well, I guess that's what happens. Low self-esteem matches beliefs that aren't very functional.
Well, and we can do it as simply as if I'm sexually abused when I'm growing up, if I'm abandoned when I'm growing up, if I am mistreated, if I'm, you know, verbally abused, well, then many times that behavior is going to create a belief in me that I deserve it.
Yeah.
That there must be something wrong with me. I'm fatally flawed. There's something inherently bad about me. And so that's a belief that then generates thoughts. And those thoughts might be things like, I'm never going to amount to anything. Nobody's ever going to love me. I don't deserve to be loved. I don't deserve good things. You know, then that creates feelings. And that feeling state is one of despondency, dejection, rejection, oppression. And so what I'm talking about in this whole entire idea is that reality, that when people's reality is not matched in truth, this is many times where we get suicide. Because the reality they have created is unbearable. And so when we get them back into a reality that is based in truth, and a lot of that has to do with relationship, because we know that even if someone is wanting to suicide, if they know one person that they're connected to, they generally will not suicide.
Oh, really?
Even if they're angry at the person. If I can get a person angry with me even, they won't suicide.
So anger is a higher state, what you're saying.
It's a feeling of being connected.
Yeah.
Because what we know is that when people are committing suicide, they are not in reality. They're not in their right mind. This is not a logical thing that people choose to do.
You know, it's interesting also relating to singles, what you said about, you know, really playing out your beliefs. So
mm-hmm.
if someone says they don't deserve someone that's very nice and kind and generous... that's one reason I suspect people repeat having the same type of partner,
mm-hmm.
the same type of character or lack of character or something like that because of their own beliefs. It's
right.
their own selection
right.
criteria at an unconscious level.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we find is when people are not connected to themselves and they're not authentic with themselves, they end up projecting onto other people all kinds of beliefs they have. Then what happens is that person gives it back to them. So if I am projecting onto you that I'm not worth anything, unless I have a very high-functioning person, they will begin to fall into that same belief, and they'll treat me that way.
See, that's interesting. And also the sequence is interesting. Beliefs to thoughts to feelings to actions.
Right.
Now, a lot of people try to change their actions, which is a really an amazing challenge, and I'm not sure even it's going to work the reverse. I think changing at the deeper level, the beliefs,
well, exactly,
will change actions. But so many
people...
Well,
that's what therapy is about, right?
Yeah. But you probably know maybe psychologists or other people that try to just do behavior modification. That may not be as effective unless you get to the unconscious.
Actually, behavior modification works if we're doing it with other parts of therapy.
Gotcha.
So I want the person's behavior to change, especially if it's harmful for them. Because if they can get some of that behavior change, they start feeling better about themselves, which then causes them to have more positive thinking, which causes us to then be able to get to the belief system that we can unearth that and change that.
But
just changing behavior is not... Is
yeah,
not,
I didn't think no. so either. So that's why it's very important anytime, actually, you go to a therapist to make sure they're very competent, and that's critical, because I would, and I'm not just talking about, you know, therapy. I mean, you could go to any professional, attorneys, CPAs, or whatever, doctors, and if they're not competent, well, that doesn't sound good. But in this case, we're talking psychology, and if you don't go to a competent therapist, I suspect it could possibly do more damage to the person.
Absolutely.
And they could actually come out of there like, whoops, I was better, and now I'm not. Or I was at a certain level. But that's something that, that's why you should always pay attention and just don't accept anything. Just do some interviews and make sure that you know who you're going to be going with. But I like this stuff because I agree with you. In NLP, it's the same thing where the deeper psychological patterns, it's called logical levels. Robert Diltz sort of looked at this, one of the first generation NLP guys, where he would look at basically the deepest and most profound is the universe, and then your identity, and then your beliefs and values. Then it goes to your skills or capabilities, behaviors, and environment. So if you change environment, doesn't necessarily change anything above it.
Right.
Which is
and
really
if it,
interesting.
If it does change, it's only temporary, because we know everywhere you go, there you are.
Exactly.
So everything in me, I take with me.
That's
and it
right.
will be reproduced outside of me, because I can't produce things outside of me that aren't authentically in me for any length of time.
And when it comes to relationships or singles that want to be a couple, there, you know, whatever you bring, you're bringing you into that relationship. They're bringing them in, and hopefully it's going to be something more functional than dysfunctional.
Well, and this is why we've talked about this whole idea. When I say to people about dating, I say, you know, McDonald's has a 90-day probationary period.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I mean, come on. You know, they don't get benefits until at least 90 days. So, my goodness.
Oh, nice one.
Yes.
I like
that. And so, I mean, not that I have, you know, my views on premarital sex, but, you know, if people are doing that and choosing to do that or living with people, I'm just saying, wow, you at least give it 90 days because.
Yeah, that's what McDonald's says. Or at most companies.
Most companies, because 90 days, we know people pretty much cannot fake their way past 90 days. You pretty much get to know the person. This is why many relationships at the 90-day mark break up.
Oh.
And so we get this like 3-month thing, and wait, wow, you made it through the first 3 months. Well, if you get to the next, then we go to 6 months, and we're like, okay, that's another mile marker. Then we do 9, and then we do a year. Well, after a year, we just start measuring per year.
I'm gonna write a book called McDonald's Without Benefits. That's what I'm going to do. But that makes so much sense, a probationary period. So,
and I'm supposed to be saying, I didn't get to tell you about this, I'm supposed to be reminding people that this is information that's going toward a book. So it isn't. So it is protected information. So as I'm giving all of this out, there is. I have to keep remembering. I never say that. And so.
Yeah, this is protected.
Yes, it is. So it isn't just, anyways.
Valuable, too.
Yes, thank you.
Incredibly valuable. So that makes sense. And, you know, why people don't see that, I suspect, I'm going to give this a wild guess, there's obviously some inner belief within themselves. I would say it's sort of an addiction to cover up for maybe some type of void within themselves, often where they will...
They don't want to wait the 90 days.
Yeah, because I think they'll look for the feeling of being in love versus the person.
And I think it's
addictive.
Yes. Well, that's where we get into pain management.
Yeah. Oh, pain management.
Right, that people do not want to deal with their own pain. And so they want to quickly assuage whatever pain that is. And if that pain is loneliness or not being accepted or not being wanted, then we will many times, betray ourselves just to get a temporary feeling of acceptance from someone when they don't really know us well enough to even truly accept us anyways.
And logically, people will understand that often, but emotionally, it's like, ooh.
Right.
They'll do anything. It's that's why I think it's almost addictive. To avoid the pain or to mask it.
Well, that's what addictions are oftentimes, is pain management.
So do you think love's an addiction?
I think if we look at the way addiction works, addictions always create a bigger void. So we wouldn't say that that true love is addicting.
Not true, but sort of
The feeling of being in love is absolutely can be very addictive.
Oh, nice. Another book title.
Yes.
We come up with the best ones on this show, I got to tell you. Hey, Tom's on the phone. Who are you talking to? The Harkins? You're making ticket reservations, right? Okay, good. So this was a good intro to what we're talking about. We just sort of had
totally
a nice little discussion.
It just evolved right into it.
Nicely done. Yes. So the reality of who you are. Maybe we should take a quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. This is Match No Match. We're going to talk about the reality of who you are. I don't know. I love this topic. Perception, reality. The people with the perception, you have the control of how you can perceive it. That means you can really create your reality. We'll be right back.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match starring Cynthia Hyatt. And, of course, no is spelled K-N-O-W. I love that part.
Yes, I do too.
Know your match. That's always important. That's what we're really talking about. The reality of who you are.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, so I like this because this was kind of a neat thing that got whatever illuminated to me, I guess I would like to say, that I use the word R as an acronym. So it is A-R-E, and so the reality of who you are is when I know that part of me. The way that I do that is I use A as acceptance, R as responsibility, E as effort. So when I'm dealing with me, the number one thing I need to do is accept myself first, completely.
Now, what does that clearly mean? A lot of listeners out there might say, do I accept that I haven't succeeded in life, or is that the starting point is really accept at this point who you are.
Who you are.
It sounds like from an NLP standpoint, that's called the present state, and then you want to move to the desired state.
Right, because if I don't accept the reality right now, I can't change it.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do anything about it.
So in other words, if you pretend.
Right, if I'm in denial.
Okay, I got you. That makes a lot of sense. So just accept it, but as a neutral event.
So acceptance, there are some things I have to accept that cannot change. And so, many people are stumbling or struggling with accepting who they are because they don't like who they are. And some of it is they need to accept maybe their height, their IQ, their talents, their temperament, their personality, their gender. And so if I can't accept those things, then already right off the bat, I'm going to be off base. I'm going to be going in a lateral direction horizontally in my life.
And you'll be fighting against yourself.
All the time.
Internal conflicts.
And I will be creating a lot of self-hatred.
See, that makes a lot of sense. It doesn't, to me, it doesn't sound like you accept the fact that you're a certain way. It means accept that at this point you are, but you can change.
Well, I accept some things that are, that is the way that they are.
Okay.
That is true. I mean, well, I am not going to be any taller than 5'7".
Is that what you are?
Yeah.
5'7"?
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect,
no, thank
perfect
you.
Height.
Thank
Excellent.
You. I have to accept the fact that I have to accept my age, right? There's nothing I can do about that.
I won't comment on that, but you look a lot younger.
Thank you.
A lot younger. But
oh,
you're right.
You.
I got you. You're
yes.
right.
These
but of
things,
course,
I have to come to terms and have peace at a very core level about the things about me I cannot change.
And part of that, I'm thinking that your age, a lot of people get upset or maybe depressed or whatever as they get older. But isn't it the meanings you attach to that age makes the big difference on whether you're peaceful with it or not?
I mean, I think it has a lot to do with that. But the big issue here is acceptance. And see, one of the things that God does is accepts us 100%. It does not mean he agrees with all of it. It doesn't mean he condones all of it. But I'm always saying to clients, do you think if God didn't accept the world today as it is, we'd all be dead?
That's right.
Once he doesn't, accept it, it's over. But it doesn't mean that his tolerance of us is a passive or a defeatist position. He is in charge of working on changing while he accepts us.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so I need to accept me while I'm changing. And the things that cannot be changed, I need to accept and have peace about them.
Now, how do you go about that? I bet some listeners are thinking, okay, it makes sense, acceptance. And maybe this is in sequence of what mm-hmm. you're going to talk about or not. And so you could defer it or not. But how would you tell someone how to accept themselves when they really don't like themselves?
I know that's a very good question. And what we find is that when I accept myself, I will begin to like myself because it creates fondness. When I start to care for myself, I become fond for me. It's like, you know, the stray cat or the stray dog. You know, the stray cat shows up at your house and everybody doesn't want the cat. Then they, you know, keeps hanging out there. It's meowing. So then they feed a little bit. So now the cat keeps coming. Well, now the cat's been there a month. They're feeding it. They're petting it. Now they've named it. Okay. All of a sudden, they're caring about it because one day it doesn't show up and now they're all upset. Right?
Yeah.
When initially they're like, we don't want this stupid thing, right? So what you want to think about is when I am fond of something, it has a lot to do with whether I care for it or care about it. And so when I start to, R is responsibility, take responsibility for me, then I naturally start to care for me. When I care for me, then I'm going to naturally be more accepting of me. And the acceptance part of this always is a God-inspired gift, because he's the one that truly can love to that degree. And we have to ask him for the ability to love ourselves and other people when we are not always lovable. And so one of the things that we know that God does, and you know, the 2 Corinthians, the love chapter, is he says love never fails. Love conquers all. Love overcomes. And so when he's practicing the love chapter on us, which is always amazing to me, right? He loves, he thinks the best of me. He hopes the best. He trusts me, which is mind-boggling to me that God would trust me with anything, right?
I trust
and
you.
Well, I appreciate that, but it's like, but I know me, and so I'm like very thankful that God is so practicing love toward me that then he says, then you need to practice that same love that I have shown you towards you. When I show that toward myself, I am better able to show that toward others.
Makes sense.
Because if I'm just trying to do it for others but not for me, then first of all, I'm not taking responsibility. I'm giving that responsibility to them. And I'm saying, I want you to love me in the way I want to be loved because I don't want to do it.
And that's an issue with singles and couples, I should say.
And so we're going outside of ourselves all the time to try to get needs met that really are ours initially to meet.
So where does forgiveness of oneself come into play here?
Well, that's part of the acceptance process.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because acceptance is the bottom issue of the grief and loss process. So many times when I have to accept me, there is probably some grief that goes along.
So that's, now I'm sure it's you've been a therapist for a long time.
20 years or so.
It's amazing you look so young. I can't believe it. But anyway, you probably have seen this many times. And does it take, you know, I don't know if it's this is a good question or not, but it probably takes some type of time or process for people to get used to accepting themselves. Mm-hmm. And
well, because our perfectionistic society, which Americans are extremely perfectionistic, which is deadly, a deadly disease, our perfectionism wants to make us think that if I accept it, then I'm going to be like this lazy toad that, you know, accomplishes nothing, and I'm going to be like completely bereft of any kind of integrity or, you know, that's what our perfectionistic part says, that, oh, if you let up, if you let it for 1 minute and are accepting and loving of yourself the way that you are, then you're going to be a complete loser. You know, you're going to be lazy, you're going to be, you know, unmotivated, all these things. But what we find, which is why this is a lie, the more accepted people are, the more encouraged they are. The better they are, the more encouraged and the better they feel about themselves. When they are accepted, they have the security oftentimes and the energy to actually make the changes they need. This is why people come to therapists. It's so powerful when you come see a therapist and they are totally accepting of you right where you're at, care about you, aren't judging you. And all of a sudden, when people get that kind of love from someone, they change, because love conquers all.
I like that. And how about, we talked a little bit about forgiveness, and a lot of people that probably don't accept themselves, they have things to let go of.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be?
Well, there's many times there's failures, past failures that they have to let go of, they have to come to terms with. There's things about themselves that they think aren't acceptable or don't measure up. This is why we have just the intensity toward plastic surgery these days. You know, I remember God, and this was so powerful, because there's very few times where I feel like I get really, like, rebuked by God, because he knows I'm a little sensitive. So he's very kind to me, okay?
Oh, nice.
However, there was this one verse that I've memorized because it's seared into my conscience by him. And it is Romans 9:20. It says, "Who are you, O man, to talk back to God and say, 'Why did you make me like this?'" And God had finally had it with me complaining to him. Because I was like, why did you do this? And why can't I be like this? And why can't I look like that? And why can't I have big hair? And why can't I have blah, blah, blah? Why can't I have whatever? And God finally said, enough, enough. Who are you? I created you because I like you. I created you the way I wanted to create you. I thought you up and I made you. So who are you to talk back to me and complain to me and say, why'd you make me like this, God? And I was like, ow, oh my goodness.
What a refreshing situation.
You know what? Though. It was a paradigm shift that was immediate.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm.
And from then on, I said, who am I? Who am I to talk back to God and complain about the way he made me?
And that helps you get back to acceptance.
That's right. And I accept me for who I am. And once I do that, I am so much more effective, so much more powerful, so much happier, so much more at peace.
Now, is this a journey? I would guess that you can get into acceptance, but then the next day there might be something that comes up. And so you got to be aware and go, oops,
well, see,
I'm not accepting
this. This is
it
a great
again.
Point, because acceptance is a relational issue. So on a daily basis, I am relating to myself with a spirit of acceptance. And so there are days when I struggle more with myself, and I'm not always happy with myself, and I don't really, you know, want to be inside of me, you know. But those are the days that I'm needing the most amount of acceptance. And so it's that whole idea of, you know, your mercies are new every morning. You know, that every day I start with me again, and I need to come to terms with me and have peace with me.
So is that interchangeable when you say acceptance? You can also think of how can I be peaceful today?
I think that acceptance creates peace.
Does peace create acceptance, you think?
I think it could, yes. I think kind of, because I can live at peace with people that I don't accept certain behaviors, which means that I probably won't be living very close to them.
Right.
So I can have peace, which can bring some acceptance, but that has also to do with levels of intimacy.
So it sounds like something that would be valuable for the listeners is that so many people in America set goals, but they're usually, and I think we've talked about this, having goals. You know, I want the house, the 2.7 kids and the whatever that is, the 3.7 dogs and the cars. And
3.7 dogs.
But what? Yeah, that doesn't even make sense. Remember the group Three Dog Night? All right, I don't know. That just popped in my mind. I'm a little scary when things pop in my mind. But I'm wondering is if people should start with each day with state of being goals. It seems like that's much more significant. Can I be peaceful? Can I be accepting? Or, you know, how do I go about that and focus on being accepting of oneself and others, peaceful with oneself?
Because I'm going to be at peace with myself today.
And that could
I'm going to live in peace with me. Because when I do that, I am far more peaceful with other people, and I also bring peace with me.
And wouldn't that be a lot more effective in obtaining goals in that state of mind versus some type of unaccepting state of mind?
Right. And see, it's one thing to say, you know, I may have behaviors that I believe are unacceptable. Okay, yes, that's true. That is a standard. That doesn't mean I don't accept me when I'm still struggling with them. And so it doesn't mean I ever lower the standard. See, that's the most amazing thing about God. He never lowers the standard. So he's always bringing us up to a higher level of being and perceiving and acting than we ever dreamed that we could be. So he never lowers the standard as he accepts us.
So it sounds like it's a matter of awareness and understanding as well, some other good
Well, you said about a state of being, and that's one of the things when we talk about perfectionism, that perfectionism is oftentimes seen as, you know, people being human doings and not human beings.
Right.
And so, yes, I need to be a human being. And my state of being, I need to be at peace with me. Even if I'm not at peace with all of my behaviors and all of my choices, I still can be at peace with me as I'm working toward being that better version of myself.
So in the state of the economy, the way it is, I suspect you probably see an increase in people not feeling as great as they used to. Of course, maybe this is a blessing in disguise because it gets down to the core issues. Perhaps their standard of living at one point, when things seemed to be going great, was just a mask for some pain about to happen, like a volcano. There's going to be an eruption here. So you probably see that a lot. So, and the pain is really sort of circulating around with so many things happening in the economy. So how do you approach that when someone comes up to you and truly are in pain? They're about to lose their house. They don't have a job. They're splitting up because probably the tie in the financial events causes the relationship to be more stressed. Where do you even start with that?
Well, I mean, that is certainly very complicated. And a lot of it, though, has to do with when I am more connected with me and I am more accepting of me, I experience less pain. Because we know that when people are comforted, they can handle more pain. And so psychologically, when I am in a better place with me, what's happening outside of me is far more manageable. When I'm at odds with me and I hate me and I am castigating myself and I am condemning myself, then it takes very little to give me pain. It takes just the person, you know, like flipping me off when I'm driving to create tremendous pain in me. Because when we get in that kind of psychological pain, we personalize everything.
So really,
now all of a sudden it's the president is doing it to me.
Yeah.
Okay, instead of, okay, wow, this is a really big problem. This is very, very complicated, and all I can do is me, and I need to start with me, and I need to be okay with me. And from there, it ripples out.
So that's interesting. I like what you said. So a lot of people, they could be like a ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. So anything can happen. Set that off, and the thing that sets it off may not have anything to do with really what happened.
Right.
And but that makes it, I would say, challenging.
Well, and what's currently happening that we see is up until 2007, America really afforded people the ability to feel good about themselves because of their external world.
Yeah.
So if I looked good, knew everybody, dropped names, had a lot of money, had a big house, had a nice car, blah, 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 then I was okay. Well, all of a sudden that starts to be removed from us and we find out how we really feel about ourselves. When we could really focus on this external thing out here and feel a lot better about ourselves than we really did. Because as long as I had that, then I'm okay. And as soon as that gets taken away, we go, oh my gosh, I'm not okay. Well, because my okayness is based on all the externals.
And on the other hand, your depression could be based on externals too. It's all an illusion in a way.
Like, what do you explain that a little more?
Well, if you rely on feeling good because things outside yourself are good.
Right.
And you rely on feeling bad because things outside of yourself are crumbling, then it's the opposite ends of the external. And a great spiritual teacher I remember at one point said that one of the goals is to be in the state of equanimity, which is balance.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Well, see, because the bottom line is, if I am controlled by my external circumstances, then every day I'm a victim to the world. That means that every day I wake up, I don't know if I'm okay or not that day. Because it's going to have everything to do with how people feel about me, how they perceive me, what I own, what I have, what I acquire that day. And so every day my internal state is up for grabs, which means I can be easily hijacked by any number of things. And so my internal state is the one that I can control. That's the only thing really.
And that makes total sense. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. We're talking about the reality of who you are. And R is acceptance, responsibility, and effort. We've been talking about acceptance. I suspect we'll start to get into responsibility. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. We've been talking about the reality of who you are. A great discussion so far about step one, accepting yourself. Maybe easier said than done, but absolutely necessary to have peace in your life.
Yes, and many times one of the first steps for acceptance, liking yourself, blah, 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 being your own best friend, however you want to say that, has everything to do with, sometimes I say to people, it's okay if you can't love yourself today. And see, when I talk about self-love, that has such a strange sound. What we want to say is care. If I care about myself, if I care for myself, that's really what God is saying, is he's wanting us to take care of ourselves. He values us tremendously. We are very important to him. And so he's saying, you're with yourself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Please care about you like I care about you.
Now, what would be demonstrations behaviorally of caring? Would someone show care for themselves?
Well, what I say to clients frequently, what did we do from 0 to 7? How did we take care of little children? We made sure they ate right. Mm. We made sure they went to bed on time. We didn't frighten them with all kinds of, you know, thoughts and ideas and purposefully scaring them, because, you know, my feelings about horror movies.
No, but you don't like them.
No.
I don't either.
No. They are like, psychologically traumatizing, and it's
like
ridiculous.
Like Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, it's ridiculous.
How about the movie Contagion? I won't see it.
No, I won't see movies like that.
How could that be entertaining?
Because people are wanting to have an experience.
Oh.
And so it's it goes a little deeper sometimes than that. But anyway, so from 0 to 7, how do we take care of little children? We're nice to them. We're kind to them. We are comforting to them. We don't, like, say things to them like, oh, that's stupid and that's silly, or, you know, don't feel that way. I mean, if we did say that to children, then that's usually something we have to unlearn. But typically, when we're thinking about domesticated pets and little children, okay, I say to people, if you just did that inside of you, were that kind to yourself, you know, that accepting. It's like when my dog does things, you know, like I use the example all the time. You know, I did not get a dog for him to do my dishes. I got a dog because I wanted a dog, right? I like my dog. My dog, you know, gets into the cat box, okay? That is disgusting. That is disgusting. Does it change how I feel about him? No. Okay, I just go, that's what dogs do. That is that's what dogs do. It's so gross to me. Okay,
I didn't even know dogs did.
Oh
that.
My gosh! Yeah, we're not going to go on that tangent about what dogs. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, but these are dogs. Okay, I accept the dog. He is the dog.
And he's being a dog.
He's being a dog, and so I don't get angry with him. I might get a little disgusted, like, please don't come around to me right now. Okay, she's like totally gross. Okay. Let me, like, I don't know, you know, but it's one of these things where I'm not gonna have these unrealistic expectations, nor am I going to judge him like, oh, now that must be a really bad dog. We need to take him back. Okay, he's a bad seed.
He didn't learn enough.
Exactly. It's just like, this is what dogs do, and it's a moment in his life. Okay, this is not like 24/7 behavior.
And the dog wouldn't even have a clue if you said that's not right.
Now he does know though.
He does,
but he still does it.
Oh,
yeah. He still will if he's
He'll look
we're not
over
careful.
Her shoulder?
He will look for a way. Now, not when I'm home, okay? Or if he's left alone for too long, he might get a little interested.
You have a smart dog, in other words.
So when you think about domesticated pets and you think about little children, you know, we are very kind to them. We are very understanding. We want to be very accepting of them. It doesn't mean that we leave them at that age, okay? This is one of the therapeutic problems we have when people don't grow up past 7. And we have adults that are acting like little children.
Behaviors that don't seem to work.
Right. And so when we're taking care of ourselves, we want to realize that we do certainly have an inner child.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. That's a nice reframe to look at it from the standpoint where if you did look at a little kid, mm-hmm. your dog, what type of thoughts would you have? What type of, how would you demonstrate that
right.
behavior?
So I would at least start with that.
I like it. That's
now,
a good
it's
going to
certainly be a little bit more complex because I'm an adult. But I'm going to at least start with some basics. I'm not going to, like, you know, withhold necessary needs from myself. That's not very caring. I'm not going to yell at myself. I'm not going to cuss at myself. Okay? And if I do, I'm going to apologize.
A lot of people yell at themselves, though.
All the time in their head. Oh, my gosh, they have such a violent internal world sometimes of themselves. Very violent internal world.
Wow. That's...
And so we see this manifest. So when you're with someone that's at peace with themselves, everyone likes to be around those people. They feel good about themselves. Well, when we have adults that are healthy adults, children love to be around those adults. They feel safe.
Yeah.
So when I create that kind of a culture inside of me, people are going to want to be around me. I'm going to attract that because it's a very comforting feeling.
Oh, back to the law of attraction.
Yes.
But on the other end, too, if you have hostility, you may be, not you, but other people mm-hmm. could be attracting hostile people.
Right.
That's
sometimes their hostility is about being victimized, and so they attract people that are victimizing of them because they think they have that underlying belief, like we said, that I deserve this, I'm a bad person.
So they have
so
to
they
play
don't
out
even
their belief.
Yeah, they don't even recognize it necessarily when people are mistreating them, or they think that they should tolerate it, or they deserve it, or whatever it is.
So people can start right here, right now, today, mm-hmm. practicing being care.
Right.
Having care for themselves.
Yes.
And why not?
Well, you know, this is one of the analogies I like to use that really helped me. Okay, because I told you about my dog, right? Now, just know that this is the only animal I bought, okay? And that's a whole other story. So I get this dog, and he has papers, okay? He's a Chihuahua toy poodle mix.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, he's 30 pounds. Okay.
Really? A big?
So I think I got ripped off, okay? I mean, this is a mongrel.
You got a mini Great Dane.
Yeah, this dog is a mongrel. Okay, he's not even a, you know, like two breeds, okay? He's not even a mix. He's a complete mongrel, okay?
And the papers said otherwise.
Yeah, papers. I got papers, a kennel, everything, okay? It's ridiculous. But listen, this is my dog. This is my dog. He belongs to me. I bought him, okay? Well, this is the story, obviously, of Jesus. This is the story of God. He bought us. He wanted us. We belong to him. We are his. Okay? And so we have this wonderful message about, you know, Jesus goes back to heaven to prepare a place for us, and he's coming back to get us, right? Well, so God really kind of showed me. He's like, you know, Cynthia, I'm going to come back, and you're the primary caregiver of you. So imagine if I went to move to California, and I left my dog with someone to take care of it, my dog, and I came back, and I found out they lost my dog, or they beat him up, or they didn't feed him. Okay, I'd kill him. I mean, relatively speaking.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily of the host. Okay, just kidding. I thought I'd throw that in.
So wow, if somebody did not take care of my dog, now this is a dog. Okay, imagine how God feels about me on a daily basis. I'm left in my own care. And he says, You belong to me, and I love you, and I left you in your care, and you are not taking care of you. Okay? If I'm mad at someone for not taking care of my little dog, who is a mongrel, right? Imagine how God is feeling. It's like, wow, please. You are valuable. You are precious. You are wonderful. You are mine. I made you. I want you.
So what would be some of God's messages, if any, to let his people know maybe they're not caring for themselves enough?
Well,
a
lot of the messages that are occurring is we understand consequences, natural logical consequences. And so we understand that where God isn't beating us up, when we beat ourselves up, there are natural consequences that come with that. There are health issues that come with that. There are failures. There's lack of intimacy. There's lack of peace in my life. And so there's all this evidence to show me if I'm not taking care of myself, I'm going to see it in my life. It doesn't mean that taking care of myself and being at peace with myself is like some panacea, you know, for nothing bad happening to me. What it means is I manage it much better, and it can strengthen me versus completely crushing me.
You know, and I've heard some things about the word disease.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, this hyphen ease.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Which is interesting. And mm-hmm. So I suspect you would believe that in that more peaceful, more congruent, more mm-hmm. aligned with mm-hmm. the higher source, the more ease you have, less
right.
disease and mind mm-hmm. over
well, it's
disease
kind of like,
type of stuff.
Or if you think about the analogy of, I always am telling people, you know, the drunk driver survives the crash, right?
Yeah, why is that?
Well, because he's going with the flow. He's not bracing himself. He's not holding himself tight and rigid.
And let me make a point now. We're not saying you should drink.
Absolutely. No. What we're saying
but
is there's this idea that, wow, why does the drunk driver always walk away? Well, they're using the momentum. They're going with things where the person that's not sees a crash braces themselves.
You know, that's true.
Yes. And so if I emotionally am going more with, I'm more accepting. Okay, I'm not crashing into everything all the time, and it's not crashing against me all the time.
That totally makes sense. In fact, I remember one day I was in I had a Mustang. Can you believe
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what year, but I was driving. It was in the rain. I was stopped at a light, and it was raining hard, and I saw this car from behind me. It must have been like a couple hundred feet away, maybe 100 feet, and I go, that car is having problems stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I braced myself.
Yes.
And it went in slow motion. Can you believe it?
Yes, I do.
It was horrible.
Yes.
And my back got hurt.
Bad. Badly.
Yeah, because I shouldn't mm-hmm. have, I should have even.
Relaxed.
Yeah, and yes. I didn't. But it was a natural instinct, mm-hmm. right?
And so when I work with couples and they have tremendous volatility between them, one of the things I'm always practicing them is, before we ever learn new communication skills, I just want you to relax.
Hmm.
When you see that person angry, I want you to relax your body. And I want you just to breathe and to relax. Because, see, then that anger is not attacking me. Even if they're directing it toward me, I am going to feel it and experience it much differently. And I'm going to respond much differently. Because, see, when my body is totally relaxed, it's much harder to activate intense emotion. Okay? Much more difficult for me to act out in anger if my body is completely relaxed.
And how do you teach that? Well, actually, we probably don't have time, but after our break, perhaps we will ask you, how do you teach being relaxed in the midst of a storm?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting.
Yes.
In fact, I've always told people at certain seminars I've done that it's not about trying to eliminate the storms of your life, but build a stronger ship. Because, mm-hmm. right, the mm-hmm. storms will be there.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I don't think you can eliminate storms, but you can actually handle storms differently.
Absolutely.
In a way that is not as
well, and if you're fighting, yes. Well, and see, it's the same thing with the surf, with a wave. If I fight the wave, it takes me down.
Oh, yeah, like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you go with the wave,
right.
you'll become a good surfer.
Right.
Oh, wait. I saw that. I said that because yesterday I saw a program called Storm Surfers.
Yes.
And have you seen that?
No, I have not.
It fascinated me for about 30 seconds. And it was like these people in these severe storms surfing. And
wow.
I'm wondering, why?
Wow. Yeah.
You said wow, I said
wow. Wow, yeah.
But it was a wow, too. They mm-hmm. were pretty good surfers.
Yes.
But that sounds scary when you see a wave like 45 feet high.
Yes.
That, wow. Oh, see, I said it too.
There you go.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. This is Match, No Match. We're talking about the reality of who you are. We're talking about acceptance, responsibility, and effort. That's very important. A good way to start your new life is today.
This is Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.